listening to the Circular Supply Chain Podcast, real conversations with the people building smarter, more resilient logistics systems. Let's jump into today's episode. Today's guest truly needs no introduction in the world of logistics and supply chains, but we'll give him one anyway. Wolfgang Lehmacher is a global thought leader, former head of supply chain and transport at the World Economic Forum, and a strong voice for innovation and sustainability. From executive roles to groundbreaking publications, he's helped shape the future of logistics. Wolfgang, we're thrilled to have you with us. I want to kick it off with a first question. Can you explain us, with all your experience, how a circular supply chain differs from a traditional linear supply chain?
In a linear world, you sell a code once. In a circular economy, you sell the same code multiple times. That's simply it. The circular economy is about making much more money by doing good. In the linear supply chain, we extract raw materials, make products, and dispose of them. Think, take, make, waste. This model has led to staggering issues. A lot of waste, more than 8 gigatons of plastics produced globally, most of which ends up in landfills or oceans. The circular model or supply chain flips this script. It focuses on closing material loops through reuse, repair, and recycling. For example, Apple uses robots like Daisy to disassemble iPhones and recover cobalt and rare earth metals for new devices. Companies like BMW design modular cars like the i-Series, and this is all to achieve one thing, to keep material in use, ideally indefinitely. In summary, circular models prioritize value preservation and retention over disposability and waste.
That's very insightful, and it was great also to read about these examples in your book, what you wrote about circular supply chain. Very interesting. And why do you think, apart from the cases you mentioned, it's essential for companies to transition to a circular supply chain, especially in today's business environment?
First, because of the financial economic incentives. Take, for example, Zara's resale program. It shows how refurbished clothes creates recurring revenues. The program offers customers options to resell, repair, or donate their used Zara garments. The integrated platform, accessible through Zara stores, website, and mobility app, allows customers to list items for resale, request repair, or just donate it to a charity organization. This incentives extends the life cycle of products, reduce waste, and promotes more sustainable fashion consumption. Second, there's, of course, resource scarcity. When we are using material multiple times, we don't need to extract it from Earth. For example, copper and sand reserves are dwindling, and financial and environmental costs are rising. Third, there's an increasing regulatory pressure. The EU laws, for example, push companies towards sustainable and circular models. And finally, I believe that also customers play a role in that. According to research, 74% of global shoppers prefer sustainable brands. So in summary, here circularity isn't just eco-friendly, it's a competitive necessity, and it's a great business model.
Yeah, that's great, especially when the brands can really show use cases. That is, of course, enhancing their brand and making much, applicable to the world. The people will like it and obviously shop more. And if they can sell several times their products, of course, they can earn much more money. And can you give an example of a business where you think, that is really something to look up, that is successfully implemented as a new technology to enhance circularity in its supply chain?
personally believe you don't need to change an entire business, although that would be the best result. But I mentioned already the Apple Daisy robots. Yeah. They disassemble 1.2 million iPhones annually, recovering valuable materials for new phones. This reduces reliance on mining, secures supply, and supports closed-loop supply chains. Apple's recycling partner recover the same amount of gold and copper as more than 2,000 metric tons of mining rock. Imagine this. There are still some challenges, but I think that technology advances and we will cope with them. So I believe that the companies that really make a dent in circularity and multi-sales are those that leverage design and technology to close the gap between linear waste and circular value.
Perfect. I just have to come back with one question. I heard from you on a conference about the new word, the new buzzword, the sovereignty supply chain, because then circular plays a role as well. When you're not depending on not too friendly countries, maybe.
Yeah, I don't like the term that much, although I mentioned it. But it means that a company controls its entire supply network. And yeah. The Apple robots are a perfect example, because you don't need to go to other countries and extract minerals. Exactly. You have it at home. So the objective is very much in line with a lot of reshoring thinking, where you bring back everything to the place where things are manufactured, but also sold, which is another important point, because a lot of people think, okay, we bring everything back to Europe, but we are selling also in the Americas, we are selling in Asia, we're selling in Africa. So it means much more distributed manufacturing and demand and supply networks. That's what is meant by this term.
When I think about what you just said, I think it really requires a collaboration between all the different stakeholders, being suppliers, manufacturers, logistics providers, even the consumer, right? How important is the collaboration really, and how can it be established, and who should be the trigger for this collaboration of all the different partners?
In summary, I can say that nobody can do this alone, but this is valid for almost every more complex supply chain. You mentioned different stakeholders like suppliers. It's clear that suppliers need to provide the material, let's say single polymer plastics, to allow recycling. But it starts already earlier. It starts with design. When you think about manufacturing and manufacturers, their design translates in modular products, for example, computers that can be disassembled, and with that it can be easy, or they can be easy repaired, but also easily refurbished. We don't need to fix the whole piece, we take it in parts. It's more or less like Legos. The consumers are also needed, although I'm always very careful with the consumer, because we, that's the economy, that's the aggregate of companies, we need to make it very easy. But nevertheless, if you look at Zara's pre-owned initiative, they have at least to put it on the app or the website or bring it into the store so that products can be resold. And then there are the recyclers and the logistics companies. The logistics companies need to bring the goods back, which is not an easy undertaking. They also sort the goods and need to sort it. And I can say that it's not that easy to find a reverse logistics solution compared to the traditional distribution logistics, but there are companies like Geodis, FedEx, UPS, DHL, they all have, and specialists as well, they all have developed solutions that help consumers to bring the goods back where they can be repurposed, reused. And then there are the recyclers, which need to do the job and turn returned goods into materials, usable parts, or reusable goods. So it is teamwork, and everybody in the chain has to adapt to the new modalities, to the new model.
Yeah. So the adoption process probably will take some time, at least in some verticals, in some industries. We see already that there's a high attention on the topic. So speaking about the different industries, Wolfgang, where do you see currently the biggest potential or the biggest potential for the future? In which of the verticals?
I take this question on a higher level. The more expensive the product, the higher the potential and the easier it is to make a business case. What we are talking about, which means selling goods multiple times, is not a new idea. Think about airplane engines, right? Airplane engines, when you buy them new, are very expensive. So early on in the, say, circular development, companies started to remake supply chain. We all know it from cars, right? Car engines in cars are very expensive. So you can buy, once when your engine is broken, you can buy a new one, or you buy some one which is remade. In the meantime, so 30 years ago, there was a difference. In the meantime, I think technology has well advanced, and a remade product is as good as a originally produced product. Otherwise, you wouldn't get onto planes, I guess. The higher the value, the higher the material, the higher the value of the materials in the product, the better it is. I mentioned the smartphones. There are a lot of precious metals in smartphones, but also other electronics. So that's a gold mine. Yeah. If you want to take it from that, it gets more difficult the lower the value of products. But there we need other measures. We need regulatory pressure to get there.
A question from my side is also, what significant trends or shifts do you anticipate in the future of circular supply chain in terms of policy, technology, and of course, the market demand? Yeah.
Now, you mentioned it. Policy will certainly change. I see a rewiring of incentives, a tightening of rules. We know all that the EU is very often criticized for over-regulating, but there's the EU Circular Economy Act that targets a harmonization of standards for recycling, waste reduction, and the single market for critical raw materials like lithiums. There is the digital product passport, which will track materials, origins, carbon footprints, and recyclability. For example, there, apparel brands must disclose the products, for example, fiber compositions, enabling AI-driven sorting systems to recover the materials. There may be a VAT shift, meaning that governments may reduce VAT for repair services for textiles and electronics and penalize virgin material use. Then there is a major development in the technology. So technologies will close loops at scale. I mentioned already AI-powered sorting. Recyclers can use computer vision to distinguish material types, for example, PET versus HDPE. which will boost recycling purity. And today we can reach a very high level in the high 90s. I think that blockchain may play a role to solidify traceability. For example, in the tracking of electric vehicle batteries. Then modular design tools will advance. I'm an advisor to Pentatonix. Pentatonix helped companies to design more modular and design for circularity. There is clearly a shift if you just look into Germany and how many young people get a driver's license. And there is a shift from, let's say, owning things and doing things yourself to buying a service. There's also a shift from ownership to assets or access, meaning that leasing is on the rise, not only in consumer markets, also in markets we are not, let's say, so familiar and so close with or close to. There are studies that say 30% of industrial equipment might be leased by 2030. And this is driven by cost advantages and total cost of ownerships. Then there is the resale revolution. A few years back, we had the news going through the press about IKEA's buyback program, which is diverting now 15,000 tons of furniture annually. And there are digital twins that offer new possibilities. And digital twins plus AI, it's the first time I mention AI. I think there's no interview without AI. But yeah, digital twins is data. And then you can use this data to build virtual replicas, to simulate product lifespans, predict maintenance needs, and also better plan manufacturing. So the trends, in summary, are policy, tech, and consumers will drive the transformation.
Perfect, yeah. Like 14 years ago when my daughter was born, I was hoping that she will never have to take a driving license anymore, that we would be when she's 18 and can take a driving license, that the cars would already come to our house and we just take one. But unfortunately, I guess in 4 years, she still will take a driving license. But yeah, nevertheless, well, apart from, of course, working together with you as an advisor, what best practices and first steps can you tell companies or recommend to companies to start exploring the circular supply chain? Are there any steps they should take first? Of course, usually you start with someone who can guide them through the process. But are there some usual or obvious steps you should do?
Circularity is about keeping some kind of control over the lifespan, or better, I prefer use span of a item or product. And what I mean with that is to get it back. So the first thing I suggest companies start experimenting with is take back schemes, build systems for reuse, start with a single product, and see how they can get their clients to get it back. And this we will also see in the development of the market and the revolution, that it will be very much product driven. So get products back, start small with one single product, use tools. For example, integrate take back options into checkout systems. Just think about Amazon and other platforms and their return for credit buttons. And of course, what is very important, because companies can easily get enthusiastic about it, avoid the pitfalls, and ensure that returned items are actually reused. Everybody has probably in top of mind some cases where take back programs were criticized when it became public that most collected textiles were downcycled instead of resold. So that's the whole take back scheme. Then there is the design part. So design for longevity. Make products that last long, and this is very often discussed. But there is also the products that may not last long, but then they should be recyclable. That means we need to think about, for example, mono materials. For example, shoes. Shoes are very complex. To recycle a shoe is very difficult because a lot of components, glue, that make it impossible. But if you make a shoe out of one material, it becomes a very, very easy thing. And look what Adidas and Nike are doing, and you will see what I'm talking about. So the design part is a bit harder. And I mentioned already the modularity. So use a kind of Lego model, and if one Lego piece is broken, you just replace it instead of scrapping the whole thing. Then if you go to the next level and you leave your own yard, you need to think about strategic partnerships. You need to think about friends and experts which you can use to understand the topic and also develop your roadmap and get the ducks in line to implement the roadmap. So this can be startups, experts, alliances, and the ecosystem of manufacturers, recyclers, logistics companies we spoke before. It's, of course, important that you take your people along on this journey. So upskilling is important, information upskilling, train people, get the incentives right. And again, avoid greenwashing. Also, people can get very much or very easily taken away. So train them well not to overstate what companies intend to do. And finally, we know it is only managed what is also measured. So important are to define the KPIs and measure the progress you are making. And it's better to make small steps and make them right than walk fast or make big steps and fall into a dark hole. So start smart, scale fast, and every step counts.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. And when you wrote your book about circular supply chain, and you read about certain success stories, and it's now a few years back when you wrote the first edition of it. And of course, it's probably difficult to find the right examples, yeah? But now hopefully it's getting more and more. Which success story stood out when you started writing your book where you said, oh, that is really something of a company that significantly improved its supply chain adopting the circularity?
We know that life is a roller coaster, right? Once you're up, another day you're down. This is true for everything, for the products you make, for the financial results, and probably also for circularity. When we wrote the book, I was happy about every company that made an effort, right? That started to embark on the circular journey. There are, of course, some superheroes, and if you really ask me what is my superhero, it's well known, then it's Patagonia. Patagonia is founded, grounded in the concept of sustainability and circularity to make a good business, has a very good reputation. The Patagonia's worn wear program repairs and resells used gear, extending product life cycle. It is probably the central archetype of the circular economy. And the ambition is high. This year, if I remember the plans well, they aim to make all products recyclable or repairable. That's a major ambition. And the result will be a reinforcement of the Patagonia brand and a reduced reliance on virgin materials, which all in all will result in much higher customer loyalty and better financial results. So I'm a super fan of Patagonia.
You mentioned also the take back programs as one direction there. A lot of manufacturers obviously are not having the network to collect the product for take back. They are sometimes a little bit dependent on the retailers or the retail chains. How can retailers and corporations, companies partner up there to facilitate those take back programs? And to which extent is some regulation required or not even supportive? So how do you see that?
Yeah, starting with the last, I'm a believer that in some areas we need regulation and regulation can help. Mm-hmm. I hear very often business saying we need more regulation to have a level playing field. Level playing field sounds for me good, but it sounds also a little bit like red ocean, right? So regulation is one way. You just force manufacturer to bring the things back. And there are reliabilities and laws that do this. I believe that, and I started with it, that what we are talking about is not a sustainability topic. It is a revenue and profit generation topic. So it's about value maximization. Retail is a cutthroat business. So we're coming back to collaboration, to new business models, to ecosystems where members help themselves. And I believe that the brands play an important role. It's a matter of strong leadership. It's a matter of inspiring people and partners, finding the right partners to get it done. So it is an ecosystem effort. It's a business opportunity. It is just not very much promoted as such. So I take this also to a higher level and think, I think we need to change the narrative of circularity and call it, as I do, right? Value maximization. We sell a coat not once, we sell a coat three times. That's good for everyone. It's good for the manufacturer, it's good for the retailer, it's good for the client, and it's good for nature. So it is about collaboration at the end of the day, inspiration and leadership.
Yeah, and it sounds like, Wolfgang, it's also some sort of change of mindset, right? From seeing that as a burden and a cost burden, rather than seeing business opportunities to maybe even find more and new business models, which we don't see today, and create win-win-win situations for all stakeholders, if I get it correctly, right?
Yeah, I'm very blunt here. I believe it's not a question of lack of incentives. If you get it right, you get your return. It is very often that we are stuck in our old habits, in our old models, and we know that change is always difficult.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang. It was a very inspiring podcast with you. The time is flying when we're talking, and yeah, I'm very happy that you've been here, joined us at our podcast. We want to push the listeners to a more circularity thinking and really to move forward. Like you said, we need the spirit, we need the mindset, and then we're looking to a brighter future. Yeah, thank you very much, Wolfgang.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you, Wolfgang.